Welcome to Galactic Chat. My name's Alex, and joining me today is Narelle Harris, author of several novels, numerous short stories, a couple of iPhone apps, and an intriguing web-based multimedia project. Thank you very much for joining us today, Narelle. And firstly, I'd actually like to ask you about the apps you've developed. Can you explain what they are, what they allow users to do, and why you created them?
Yeah, basically they're lists of things under those subject headings. So Melbourne Literary, Melbourne's a UNESCO City of Literature. And so all this ties in with why I wanted to do it. I was just really keen. I thought that was a great idea. And there's all this stuff about Melbourne, as you know, which is sort of literary based. We've got such a rich culture, and there's so much of its literary history that's reflected in other things that happen in and around the city. Yeah. And I love compiling lists, basically. And once compiled, I always think, this is such a cool list, I'll share that. And I've done that with websites in the far past, but, you know, part of the thing is here is, you know, you're trying to make a living as a writer and move out of having to do day jobs sort of thing. So I think, oh, well, there's this opportunity to actually turn that into something that I might make money from. I did make a little from it. Mostly it's helped me get other jobs, actually. But
right.
What it is, I am not a programmer.
Yep.
I'm a content provider. And what happened is I discovered there's a company, an American-based company called Sutro Media. And they essentially provide a content management platform. And they originally invited travel writers, which is how I found out about it, because my husband, Tim Richards, is a travel writer.
Mm-hmm.
So he has got a couple of apps with them as well. So they approached travel writers to say, we want to do apps which give people a guide to travel destinations around the world. So Tim has written Melbourne Historical for them, again, a guide to historical elements of Melbourne. And it was just a perfect platform for this information that I'd sort of just randomly gathering together for my own entertainment.
Yeah.
So if you get the app, you can separate it into, you can sort it by category. So there are books set in Melbourne, Melbourne-based authors, literary locations, so places that maybe appear in significantly in books. So there's a little entries to that. Bars and cafes that are named for books. I've just added a new one called Goldilocks, which is a bar here in the city.
Fantastic.
And they've got like three bears up on the wall and picnic tapas kind of items to pick from and things like that. So I essentially use their content management system to write reviews or introductory things about books or writers or any of these places and locations and things to act as a guide. So if you want to know more about Melbourne's literary history or things that you could do or things that you could read, because not everyone who looks at the app is necessarily here in the city.
Yep.
But if people are interested in Australian literature, at least this is Melbourne-based literature, they can have a look and go, well, here are some writers, here's a few links to some of the works that they do. So it's meant to be a bit of a guide, and it's not meant to be comprehensive. Occasionally I get people say, well, why haven't you listed all the second-hand bookstores? Well, that's what the Yellow Pages is for.
That would be an unforgiving task.
It would be very harsh, particularly in the current climate where so many things are changing and sadly closing down. So, and there's a lot of authors I don't have either, because I'm not trying to record every single Melbourne-based writer ever.
To let people talk to them.
There's probably 250 hours worth of work in this already. I will never make the money back for my time. But I'm trying to make sure that I've got a good representation across genders and ethnicities, and whether people are writing for young adults or, if it's crime fiction or science fiction or mainstream and things like that. So that I don't have every single person ever in there, because I'm just trying to be a representative sample, which is why sometimes there are more obscure writers.
Cool. So it's going for breadth rather than depth, I guess, in a sense.
Yeah. So it's meant to be sort of a broad introduction to the kinds of things that are available. It's meant to be a jumping off point. There's a lot in there, but it's not meant to be a completely comprehensive list.
Fantastic. I think I can only think of three books off the top of my head that are kind of set in Melbourne, which are like Neville Shute's, was it On the Beach, I think it was, Courier's New Bicycle, and the Kerry Greenwood Mysteries. So the fact that you've got sort of so many other bits and pieces and references in there is, I think it's really awesome. And I can imagine being that sort of tourist who would enjoy having an app like that. I hate James Joyce's Ulysses, but I get the idea of Bloomsday around Dublin, and it seems to me like this app sort of allows people to have their own little mini versions of that to an extent here in Melbourne, which is awesome.
Yeah, and I've started to include podcasts as well, which has been fun.
Yeah, nice. Very cool. Now, as I said, you've had a number of novels published. I think the one that I knew you for was The Opposite of Life, before I read your collection Showtime from 12th Planet Press. But at the moment, you seem to be mostly focusing on, as I called it earlier, a web-based multimedia project, which seems like one of those sorts of projects that a lot of people were hoping creative types might come up with, using the internet to be really innovative and creative, but it doesn't seem like there's been that many of them come out yet. So it's really cool to see what you're doing. It's called Kitty and Cadaver, which is an awesome title. So can you tell us a bit about the project as a whole and kind of why you're doing it in this way?
It turned into this quite organically, actually. My husband sat me down just the other day and said, can you explain exactly what it is you're doing? So I was just going off and doing stuff. The initial impetus came from the fact that I love books in which rock and roll saves the world from monsters.
Excellent.
And there are quite a lot of those around.
Yes.
But of course, you know, there's never enough of these things. So I had this idea that I wanted to do something in which there was a rock band that expressed magic through music to tackle monstrous things. And I've always enjoyed sort of horror with a humorous twist.
Yep.
So that was the original idea. And as I started to pull together the story and then realised, oh, this could be kind of a cool idea, because the ideas of the band, the way I've organised it, that the band kind of started in the 13th century with a piper and a drummer, and then using the axe principle, as in, you know, with an axe, you replace the handle, you replace the head, you replace the handle, you replace the head.
Yeah.
100 years later, you've got an axe which has historical continuity, but it's none of the same original constituent parts.
Yeah.
So I have a band that here we are 700 years later, has historical continuity with its origins, and it actually has, you know, members of the band still have artifacts from its history.
Yeah.
So Kitty and Cadaver is the latest incarnation of a band that started 700 years ago. And the natural offshoot of that was, if I'm writing a story about a band, well, clearly I have to write lyrics, because some of the songs will be magic, but you start to think, well, how does this band make a living? I bet there's not a lot of cash in vampire slang, as Buffy found out. So there'll be songs that are for magic, and there'll be songs that they play when they're in, they're performing just as a band, busking or whatever. So things started to slowly come together, but it's literally 35 years since I played an instrument. I learned piano when I was younger, and I've dabbled in music and writing lyrics and stuff over the years, but I've never done anything serious because I no longer can play an instrument, and I do not have the time to relearn.
I understand that.
Keyboard. But fortunately, there's a niece I prepared earlier, or rather than my brother prepared earlier. But my niece Jess Harris is a musician. She studied at the JMC Music Academy here in Melbourne. And we'd been looking for something to, because I just think she's fabulous. I love the music that she writes. And so I just said to her, I want to do this, but I need a musician. Because we'll talk about that a bit later, but there's a process that I actually make up melodies for when I'm doing lyrics so that they don't just sound like poems.
Yeah.
But I don't think most of my melodies are very good. Jess almost never uses them. So having that got in place, I thought, well, I'll do it as a website. We can just do it as we go and post it, because that way people can hear the music and see the story at the same time. And originally it was just, I think that would be kind of fun, and I realised I didn't think I could find a publisher who would be able to do an e-book, a digital book and a music at the same time. I didn't think publishers were kind of at that point yet.
Sure, yep.
And then the drummer from Jess's band Vermilion, her old band, he's also an artist, Nate Holden. And I was talking to him, I thought, well, look, I want to get my own banner art done. If we're going to do this, Kitty and Cadaver website, it should have its own art. So I spoke to him, and he was going, oh, this is really cool. And I was telling him about the idea and the 700 years of history, which meant that you could do stories set in any of those times.
Yeah.
And he said, man, have you thought of doing a comic book? I went, no, but hell yeah. So I've actually written a 20-page comic book, which is the kind of the secret origin of their drummer, Yuka, who's like the tiniest, angriest Japanese lady you ever met.
I think she's awesome.
Right. So there's this story called Demon of the Earth, which is her origin story about how she discovered she had what I'm referring to as the minstrel tongue, music magic.
Yeah.
And what made her so very angry. He's starting work now on the artwork for that. So ideally, I don't know how long it's going to take. He's working on a comic book of his own, but this will be the first kind of thing we're doing. So Jess is co-writing music with me, and sometimes just doing some of her songs. She just let me use in their entirety as well, like Crawling Ants, which is from chapter one, is solely her work. But I just love the writing that she does. So we've got music coming, we've got the comic book coming.
Yep.
And then my creative spark has just been going off its nut, basically. And what happened was, one of the things about Yuka and her origin is she wears jewellery which is made up of the smashed musical instruments from her heavy metal band, which were all killed, which is one of the reasons why she's so very angry. And so she's turned bits of drum and guitar and keyboard into these thick bracelets that she wears.
Yeah.
And then I just thought, that's really cool. I wonder if people actually make jewellery out of their stuff. And when I did the research, there were a couple of places in the US where there were people, and on Etsy, making jewellery out of these things. But, as with the, there are not enough books with rock bands fighting monsters. Clearly not enough jewellers making jewellery out of repurposed instruments. Hell, I've got to do me something about that. So I just decided that I was going to, I don't know when and how, but I'm going to do a workshop. So this jewellery project, and I've now partnered with a Melbourne-based jeweller named Ali Alexander, who's just really creative and inventive jewellery styles that she does. And so I was talking to her about the project. She went, oh, hell yeah. So I've already started to collect, guitar strings. And I'm visiting on Friday. I'll be going to visit a guy who has a piano business in Montrose. And I read about him. He often has to collect pianos. People are getting rid of old pianos.
Yeah.
You can't really sell them. And if they've been sitting there for 10, 20 years, not only are they out of key, but they will never, ever be in key again.
Yes.
They're too old. And all he can do is smash them up, salvage the metal frames. The sale and throw the rest away. So I got in touch and said, if you're just throwing it away, can I have piano strings and hammers and keys if you've got them? Because I suppose you'll have to, there's probably a marker for ivory keys, but there might be other stuff. And he just wrote back and said, oh, that sounds cool, yeah. So I'm going to visit him on Friday and hopefully, interview him a little bit for the blog.
Yep.
So this is why it just got creatively got out of control. And we're getting more ideas, but it's like, oh, no, we better bed this stuff down. Stop having creative ideas. So the idea is partly, I wanted to do this in a particular way, and I wanted to maintain a creative control over it. So I'm still interested in finding out if there are publishers there who would like to publish this, and I've had expressions of interest from my own publisher from Walking Shadows at Clandestine Press. But at the moment, it's just this massive, grand storytelling experiment that is telling this story in the book, but also in the way that the music is used, that we have comic books springing out of that.
Yeah.
So that there's this craft project that will be springing out from a world that is, I'm doing it all under a Creative Commons license because I come from a background of fan fiction, from fandom. And it's perhaps a little arrogant, but this is the idea. Well, if people enjoy this, people want to participate and engage, I want to make that possible.
Yeah. One of the emails, or one of the things I got as a subscriber the other day was one asking for people to actually respond to a picture that you had found. Was it from one of the Polish salt mines, I think? Asking people to respond to that in fiction and and therefore contribute to this world that you're creating, which is just, it's such a mammoth idea. You're taking this idea, it seems to me you're taking this idea of like a shared universe kind of idea and just making it broader, because as you said, it's not just the fiction, it's incorporating a lot of the other creative arts as well.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, it's fun. And, you know, I know from being on the fanish side that creative involvement is fun. And I decided probably the best way to encourage that was to invite it, not merely wait for people to feel so engaged. So I've actually already had a response to that. So in about a week, I'll do another, a follow-up post with the response that and any more that come in to that post. I want to, and I'll be doing music response too, hopefully later, because I've got the idea of maybe writing a song lyric that says, well, this is what the lyric is now.
Yep.
If you're so inclined, what do you think this would have sounded? If this song's been in the repertoire for a couple of hundred years, what would it have sounded like on the harpsichord? How would it have been as a madrigal? What did it sound like in the 60s? Did it have a grunge rock version? So have a, you know, because each band will take whatever those songs in the repertoire are and perhaps mould them for their times and what they're trying to achieve. But, you know, there's opportunity for art response, for writing response, for music response. And I think it's really cool. So with the Creative Commons license that I'm using, it's essentially play as much as you like, but acknowledge the source and don't do anything commercial. Basically, don't make money out of the idea. If you think you've got a great idea for making money, we'll talk. You know? I want to make sure that anybody who has a sort of a great creative idea gets, nobody's ripped off, basically. So, you know, I'm hoping to, if things go beautifully well, it'd be really nice to have more of an income from this. But it's, I mean, it's not the plan, but it's not the primary goal at this point. I'm just really interested in this as an experiment in the current environment about how to do storytelling in a more creatively huge way. And it's massive. Every now and then, quite frequently actually, I'm stopping to have a panic attack about it. Good Lord, what have I done? But because I'm still writing the book. I'm up to chapter four. Part three of chapter four has just been posted. Yep. I'm just writing chapter six now.
Now, I was going to ask you about that. I heard from somebody that you might have been somewhat involved in a debate, the pantsers versus the plotters. For those people who aren't in with the lingo, because I wasn't, had to have it explained to me, pantsers are people who don't have plots or stories figured out before they start writing, and plotters have a framework, if I got that right.
Yeah, you seem to the pants kind of thing. So what it doesn't mean that I'm not completely pantsing it. I do have a plot. I have, I've actually written out the plot for the first 10 chapters, so each of those first 10 chapters is plotted.
Uh-huh.
But I had to stop because I didn't know who the characters were yet. I mean, I knew their names.
Yeah.
I didn't know who they were. So I've had to write, and I'm slowly finding out, and I'm feeling that I know what makes Sal tick. I know why Steve is the way Steve is. I certainly know why Yuka's so angry. and there's Stephen, young Stephen, because there's old Stephen, there's little Steve, and little Steve's a bit annoyed about being little Steve. But Stephen is one of the new characters who is kind of being recruited to replace. Because as the story starts, the band has essentially come to Melbourne to recover from a vampire slaying they had to do in Hungary, and they've lost their band leader, Alex, and Alex's boyfriend, Kurt. They've both been killed. So they're sort of hiding and recovering and thinking, well, we need to get more band members, and we need to find out who's going to be the new leader of the band, because the band name changes with whoever the leader is. Yeah. Now, obviously, from the title of the story, we know that Kitty's going to step up to the plate eventually. the previous name of the band was Rome's Burning, but like I said, Alex is dead now, so they're here trying to move it. So I had to get a proper feel for the characters by writing them. I find that I can't really do it any other way. And how the rest of the plot in the last half of the book will unfold will depend partly on who they are now. And so I've got a good sense of that, so I'll be stopping to... I've got a good structural plot for the next half of the book, but in terms of working out chapter by chapter what's going to happen, I just felt that I had to know them a little better. So it's possible. I'm not completely pantsing it for anybody betraying the cause. there is structure there, but, you know, in terms of filling out the structure, I just needed to. But so I'm just writing it ahead, basically because I'm impatient. I don't want to wait a year.
I was going to ask that too. Do you have an expectation of how long it's going to run in terms of coming up once? Because you post, what is it, like a thousand or a couple of thousand words every week?
I was doing larger chunks for a while, but I think chapter two was in two quite large parts. But that was A, taking me much too quickly up to where I'd only written. But the other thing from talking to people is that it's ideal if it's 1,000 words or less, then it's ideal on your Monday morning where people either get their email or, you know, think, I'll just check that out. It's quite a simple, short amount to read on the tram or the bus, yes, or getting to work or at your morning tea or whatever. So it's bite-sized and it's only a week to the next bit.
Yeah.
And I blog in between about other things that are related to the Kittyverse or things that I find appealing or whatever. I'm getting some guest bloggers in and doing some photo blogs. And like I said, there was the one inviting a bit of a creative response. And I have a sub-series called Rock and Read, which are recommendations of other books with rock and monsters and stuff like that. So yeah, it's down to usually between 600 and 1,000 words per story post on the Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was partly just to keep it a manageable size because it's harder to read. Because it's not available as a digital book, so you can't put it on your Kindle, for example. So it's you've just got to read it off the blog, and I've got to keep that a manageable size.
Or in email, because I think that's actually worked really nicely because I would forget to visit the blog because that's just what I do. I mean, you can put it in your RSS feed or whatever, but actually having it arrive of a Monday morning in my inbox is a really nice way of A, being reminded that I'm actually kind of in the middle of this book, which hasn't been finished yet, which, you know, I hate doing that with series, let alone a book.
I promise you it will get finished somehow.
Yes, that's what they all say.
I've never not finished a book.
Oh, that's a good track record then.
I've occasionally finished a book and then had to trash the whole thing, but the damn thing got finished first.
Fair enough. So, Kitty and Cadaver has prose fiction, prose non-fiction on the blog. It has a comic associated with it, music, jewellery, and potentially other things that you're currently not revealing because they're too scary.
Yeah, no, we'll just wait till everything's better down. We'll find out how long it's working.
Yeah. So, and like I was saying before, this is the sort of thing that I think the internet, I mean, clearly allows people to do because it's allowing you to collaborate potentially across the entire world and all of those sorts of things. Do you think that there are other things that people could be doing with this, with new, I guess it's still new media to an extent, that they aren't doing? Like, where do you see the unexplored areas for creative types?
I think a lot of it comes down to how willing people are to share the world that they have. And I do think the Creative Commons licenses make it possible to have a clear framework for how to do that. And because there's different levels of Creative Commons license as well that you can choose from. So I chose one that I felt protected the economic rights of everybody who'd be participating. But, yeah, I think there has to be a change of mindset. And it's something that I've struggled with as well, had to, you know, thinking through how I wanted to do this. I think the one thing about being on the internet and the way you see how fans respond to things and you see how things work on the internet is that if people love a thing, they want to engage with a thing.
Yep.
And they want to be able to have their discussion boards, but they'll also do their tumblers and they'll riff on ideas from that. They might, you know, for example, yeah, we all know through fandoms, people are always pairing up people who seem to have nothing in common except the occasional very intense staring.
Yes.
Which is, you know, I think they're perfectly valid interpretations as well. So, but people like to engage and then imagine beyond what they're seeing.
Yeah.
And you can't stop that. I think it would be a terrible shame to stop that. But, you know, in terms of trying to work out where you as the creator, where your control is, and, you know, I mean, I don't want to suddenly find that somebody else is making $1 million from my idea. And, like, yeah. I feel so grubby talking about the money side of things, but, you know, the fact is that most writers have to have their day job.
Yeah.
We have to work in an office and we do this for love, and every now and then we're a little lucky and somebody pays us a little money for it. But the ideal is always eventually to be able to do this and have this support paying the rent and paying the bills and stuff like that. I mean, I've got no illusions myself about becoming a multimillionaire or, you know, the next J.K. Rowling. And in fact, if people would stop looking at me and saying, hey, you could be the next J.K. Rowling, I'd really appreciate the easing off of pressure. If they would stop doing that because, like, no, that's not going to happen. It's very rare. Mm. But you know, I'm in a fortunate position myself because I actually paid off my mortgage last year, so I'm in a low debt situation, and so I actually only do an office job 3 days a week now.
Yep.
So I have 2 whole days a week to devote to this project, and it's just gone mad. Just having time has just gone a little bit insane. So in terms of how, you know, going back to the actual question of how creators might sort of use the internet, I think there has to be this concept of an invitation to participate.
Yeah.
Because that's what the internet is and does. That's what social media is all about, to varying degrees in different ways. Because like things like Twitter and Tumblr and Facebook all operate quite differently from each other.
Mm.
They're all different ways of engaging. But engagement is the name of that game.
Yeah.
And so if you want to do things online, there's, I think, you have to plan for how that engagement's going to happen. Maybe the engagement won't happen. Maybe everyone will hate it. Maybe they'll just read it and get me.
That doesn't sound like it so far.
It's a risk you take with any creative endeavour too. You put it there and you throw it out to the wind, and maybe it's just not the zeitgeist, you know, and that's fine. I'm having the best of fun anyway. So, but I think that's one of the things that people need to keep in mind when they're doing this. And I think, you know, this perhaps is more of an openness to that, particularly with people who are using social media and who do feel comfortable with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know, you know, traditionally many writers have been made quite nervous about, you know, just things like fan fiction and things. Like, I know of one writer who was speaking to me, she was quite concerned because she apparently had a couple of fanfic writers write something and then try to sell it as a novel, and then she actually had to go to court because they were trying to steal her IP, and it's just like, it's just don't steal my babies, people. I'll let you play with my babies, but don't steal my babies.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a livelihood issue there.
Yeah.
There's also the kind of proprietorial nature of, you know, how you feel about characters that you've created.
Yeah.
You know, so this is one thing to play with the idea, but it feels quite uncomfortable, the idea that someone might take over the idea.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, I don't know if that's just a problem that I have with them. Maybe I need to learn to let go a little bit more with that. So that's partly what I'm playing with here. But
yeah, no, it certainly seems, I mean, there's a very different sort of attitude in terms of, well, the creator, the original creator, and then how other people get to interact with it, which I think some people just, well, they forget, or they don't care, or they don't pay attention to the differences between them, which, yeah, like you said, is one of the dangers of internet production, I guess, or really just internet collaboration and so on.
Yeah, and interestingly, something that TV's been dealing with, obviously, for ages, because there what you have is somebody's come up with an original concept, has multiple writers, multiple creators involved in it, including the actors, and as well as all the production cast, and you've got, you know, so it's, you know, we actually, there's actually already a kind of model, but how that works as a business model is, I have no idea. So, like I keep saying, it's a big storytelling experiment. The nature of writing itself is changing, and how books, I think, get too anxious about the death of the book.
Yeah.
It'd be like people, you know, in times past getting terribly, terribly anxious about the death of the scroll because somebody had gone and put it between 2 hardcovers and called it a book. And my God, where is the scroll at now? Who's going to read?
I don't remember who said it, but I saw a thing the other day that said, books are threatened by the Kindle in the same way that stairs are threatened by an elevator.
Yes, yes.
Which I thought was kind of profound and kind of silly at the same time. But
yeah. I mean, I've blogged about this before on my regular blog, in that the worst book in the world cannot be made a good book by putting it on paper.
No.
The best book in the world cannot be made a dud by giving it to you digitally. There might be different ways in which we prefer to read.
Yeah.
But for me, it's always been about the story and not the medium in which the story is delivered. So for me, I don't really see that much of a quality difference. And for me, also, a lot of the waxing lyrical about the beauty of books. have you seen most books? Most books are on quite cheap paper. I think the kind of book, there's Sophie Cunningham did a book called Melbourne, non-fiction book. There's a series all done by, I think it's called New South Press.
Right.
But there's a series of books all about different cities. And so Sophie Cunningham has written one about Melbourne, and it's kind of like a couple of months of her life. And for anybody who lives in Melbourne, you read that, and it's just a really beautifully engaging non-fiction book, but it's kind of her love affair with the city.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things about it is, it's the beautiful book that they're all talking about. It's gorgeously hard, the beautiful, thick paper.
Yep.
The the edges that look hand cut, so that that slightly fuzzy edge.
Yes.
It smells nice. Most books I don't really much care to smell for. You know, they smell a bit chemically, and I don't get off on that. It just gives me a headache. But
yeah.
You know, this is the book they mean. But it's like one in 100,000 books, which is the book they mean when they talk about the beauty of books.
Absolutely.
So, buy your beautiful books, but, you know, I think there's, for some of them, a lot of trees have not necessarily died for a good cause.
Yes. Speaking of which, you're clearly spending a lot of time on Kitty and Cadaver and planning or pantsing the story, depending on...
Panicking. I had to take a weekend away. My husband took me for a weekend away because I was having panic attacks. Because I'm going, well, I'm writing... I know how to write a book. I don't know how to publicize a book. I don't know how to develop engagement and a marketing strategy.
Yep.
I don't know what I'm doing. This was articulated mostly as, oh, my God, what have I done?
So it's at this point that me saying something like, you should document it all and then put out a book afterwards to tell other people how to follow in your steps. That's a bad idea, right?
No, actually, it's a great idea. And one of the things that happened is that because I was panicking and because my husband is, you know, fairly magnificent, I will say, he just sort of looked at me panicking because he was copping the raw end of my just lashing out at everybody, and he's ducking for cover, you know, hoping he's not get hit by flying crockery as I shrieked hysterically in the corner. I don't throw crockery. But his response was, you are clearly terribly, terribly anxious about this. I have ideas. If you promise that you'll be quiet and listen... we'll go away for the weekend. So we went for a romantic weekend away in Warburton to do a strategy and engagement marketing, a marketing and engagement strategy.
That's fantastic.
Eventually. So we sat down and I made copious notes and I typed things up. So, yeah, it was romantic in the, you know, that was an awesome thing for him to do for me. And he has really good ideas and he's very calm and logically, so he puts ideas together really, really well. So I've got... I now have a commitment to 3 hours every Friday morning.
Yep.
That gets spent on my marketing and engagement. I've got a massive to-do list. So, you know, I'm not trying to desperately get it all done at once, and I'm actually going off for a trip to Canada in a couple of weeks. So I'll have to delay the release of the media release until I get back from Canada. But that gives me those hours for the next couple of weeks because I have to build up a mailing list. I don't have... Nobody just has a mailing list around unless they're a media company and they're not going to just give me their mailing list. So I'm actually going through newspapers and magazines and looking for the contact lists. I've made nominal lists of the types of people I need to contact.
Yeah.
And that will include radio stations and stuff because Jess, I spoke to her and she's perfectly prepared to play Unplugged.
Nice.
On a radio show and stuff like that. So, you know, there's, but of course I can't let, send that out and then disappear for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So I have to wait until mid-September when I'm back from the trip. But yeah, I do want to keep a plan of it, I guess, and do something about what those experiences are and how successful or otherwise they may, because I don't know how successful they're going to be yet.
Yeah.
But at least now I have a clue, whereas before I was completely sans clue. And a panic attack.
It all sounds really exciting, actually. I think it's going to be really interesting to follow how the world and everything around it develops. Because I mean, you're so committed and passionate to it, but you're also so willing to bring everybody else in. That I think that's really nice.
That's one of the most fun parts, actually. It's one of the great joys has been working with Jess to write music, working with Nate. And this is new. I mean, I've read a lot of comic books. I've never written a comic book script.
Yeah.
In fact, to give him a plug, Jason Franks, who wrote Bloody Waters, which was nominated for, I think it was on the Aurealis nominations this year. Magnificent book about rock and roll and monsters.
Right.
The Devil was great, but he also writes comic books and draws them, and he's been a fabulous help. So he's going to do the lettering for us for the comic, but he's been giving Nathan and I both excellent advice, and he's been, you know, just fantastically supportive. And I always think that creativity shared, I mean, it's the fanish approach, I guess. You know, shared creativity is at least 10 times as much fun. And I like the idea of working with other people to create new things. I mean, creativity is just a ball. Why wouldn't you want to do that? So, and there's all these areas that I have no skills in. I can't draw for nuts.
Yeah.
I can't write music. I could do lyrics fine. And working with Ali for the job. I'm no jeweler. I'm no craftsperson. Back at high school, I remember we made clothes as part of a, back in the day when women did sewing, girls did sewing and the boys did woodwork. Everything I made in sewing fell apart. I was shocking. I got no skills in that area at all. But Ali does. So, you know, if you've got the idea, but find the people who can help you implement those ideas. I mean, yep. And everyone, it's really been gratifying because everyone that I've spoken to and has come on board with this has been just as excited. I've been speaking to a musician lately, and he's just emailed me back to say, you're looking for basically instrument or instrument parts that will otherwise be thrown away that we'll be able to use and repurpose for the jewellery project. And he emailed me today and said, I've got a ukulele and a violin and this massive list of things. And I'm going, sure I'm allowed to disassemble the ukulele and the violin? Because I think earrings or something that's made out of carved from wood from a violin that would otherwise have to be thrown away because it's cracked.
That's magnificent.
What a waste. But to have something that you could wear which is from something that made music, I think that's... Man, I'm doing this jewellery project, I think, because I want to wear this stuff. And I need to find someone to make it for me.
Does that mean that anybody who's listening to this who has, you know, a broken old ukulele in the corner should just send you an email?
Absolutely. If you go to the website, if I may plug, it's kittyandcadaver.com. So kittyandcadaver.com. At the top, you've got Kitty Project, and the jewellery project is underneath that just at the moment. When the comic book comes in, the comic project will be listed there as well. And then hopefully, in due course, when we've got the songs written up, and Jess is kind of the musical director at this point, so we're going to get to the point where she gets a band together. We actually hope to do an album.
Fantastic.
And we'll have to work out how that will get funded, and we may do it through Possible, or, you know, we'll look at crowdfunding options or how much it might cost, and I might just pay for it because, you know, I don't need money anymore, I think. But the jewellery project there kind of lists the sorts of things we're after. But essentially, if it's a music instrument that would otherwise be thrown away, if it's guitar strings, if you've got pegs, guitar pegs or violin pegs, or just it used to belong to a musical instrument that's dead, give me your buzz.
Excellent. And we'll have a link to the website in our show notes as well.
Okay.
So you'll be able to just go click on it straight away.
And if you read it and you feel like you feel the urge to draw a picture or just do a thing, just do a creative thing, just let me know. Because either we can post it on the site, and I'd be so excited by that, or you post it on your own site and we'll do a link to it. I just I would love if people wanted to respond to it in that way.
It's also very exciting, Narelle. Thank you so much for coming on Galactic Chat and telling us about it. And perhaps we'll need to redo this interview in about 12 months' time, and we'll see just how crazy the Kitty and Cadaver world has got.
I know, or at least, you know, the lessons learned. You can't be a shining example. You might as well be a horrible warning. So one way or the other, there'll be something to say in 12 months' time.
Fantastic. I'm betting it's going to be the, you know, perhaps not entirely shiny, but shiny with a little bit of edge worn off or something. That would be my guess.
Well, it'd be really cool if nothing else, if there's something to take from this, that if other people want to sort of play with this idea and look at other experiments of this type of their own, that there might be, and again, you know, like I was saying with Melbourne Literary, that, you know, I could probably think, and I put them out this, and it, you know, it's been done once. Why should you have to do it again? I'm a great believer in sharing your knowledge. The whole knowledge is power, but only when it's shared. And it's the sharing of knowledge which gives the knowledge and the person, I think, power. But, you know, I just, if there's something that I learn from that, why wouldn't I want to help other people learn from it? People care.
I'm pretty sure people care.
So I'm definitely all up for, you know, tracking this, seeing how it goes. And one of the first things I learned was you can't build it and they will come. I've been writing this. But there's so much stuff out there. There's so much noise out there. So trying to raise the profile of the project. Because essentially, if nothing else happens, I'd just really like for people to read it. I'm enjoying writing, and I'd like people to read it and listen to the songs that Jess and I have done, and when the comic book comes, you know, I'd like... obviously, anything a creative person does, whether it's art or writing or music or, you know, whatever it is, you want people to see it. And, you know, if nothing else happens, I really want people to see it. And I hope they have at least a fraction of the fun that I'm having.
Folks, like I said, the link to Kitty and Cadaver will be in the show notes, so you should definitely go and click on that. It's very easy to navigate your way through the different sections of the story, so don't be afraid that you're going to get spoiled or anything like that. It's very clear. So definitely go to the website and read it, and like Narelle said, if you've got a comment or a creative response, you should let her know, because clearly that's just going to make her day.
It will. I will happy dance like you won't believe.
And will that be on the website as well?
You never know. We do have, because the way we've set it up, we do have a YouTube account.
Ah, so we could have interpretive dancing.
We could have interpretive dancing. I'm hoping eventually to get to a point where there might be an animator who might want to do a film clip for one of the songs.
Oh, that's nice.
At the moment, the YouTube account's got Jess performing at some open mic night, so there's a couple of the songs. They're up there at the moment. But, we've got a Tumblr and we've got, we're doing things. We're doing so many things, Alex.
So my additional warning then is, people, don't go to Kitty and Cadaver unless you've got a fair amount of time to spend.
Because you may get sucked in. I hope you get sucked in. But there's nothing else. Like, there's a couple of bite-sized things. There's a click to read the book, which will take you you can read from chapter one, but every chapter that comes up has got the links from the start, so you can, if you realise that you've missed a couple, you can just lob on in. There's a section just to listen to the songs, a couple of which are me singing a cappella, which is hilarious.
Nice.
I'm assured that I'm not completely awful. My problem basically is that I have a rock and roll soul but a country and western voice. but there's
a song. You're going to sound like Johnny Cash to me.
There's a lullaby, which is, I won't tell you anything, it's all spoilers, but there's a lullaby, there's the song that Yuka sings in chapter two, which I performed live at a convention this year. So I did my reading and I sang. I was so nervous because I just thought it would be awful. People asked me, no, you weren't awful. I'm not sure if that's the same as being good, but apparently I was awful. So, because there are some others, Jess is still working on stuff and she's doing a range of songs, so these two quite simple songs. There's possibly like four notes. But I have a lullaby and a Yuka's song, which is sort of like a lullaby to get the dead to stop being restless. There's quite a bit already on the site of songs and story and things and stuff.
Magnificent. Narelle, thank you very much for coming on. It's been really interesting, and I hope that it does indeed continue to go well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and me too. I'm having so much fun. I don't want to stop yet. I promise not to stop before the book's finished.
That would be appreciated.
Yeah, so you will all get to find out eventually how it ends. It'll take a while for us to, at 1,000 words a week, it'll take a while to get there, but I promise we will.
Excellent. Thank you very much. See ya.
Bye-bye.